On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Welcome to the On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Happy Monday, everybody. We have made it to another beginning of a new week, so thank God for the opportunity to be here. I want to go right into our shout-outs today. We're going to go into Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7 KSFM Radio in New York City, currently with iTorRadio.com. You can hear Barry doing his thing on Saturdays from 7 to 10 p.m. and again on Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m. When he's not doing that, he is gracing New York with the best of live R&B events all over the best of venues as the CEO of Track One Entertainment. I want to thank my team, Lady Diamond, Elaine Yeves, DJ Dome Record Rodney Williams, Monster Miles, and of course, last but not least, that awesome panelist and activist out there in Toledo, Ohio, Deacon Zeddy Williams, for all that you guys do on and off the air and just in life in general. To my favorite five panelists, I should say my Fab Five starters, Patrick Irvine, who's going to be our guest tonight, for all intents and purposes, this man deserves the slot. I want to thank Salo Jenkins, Altariq Atkins, Professor Carl Tone Jones, Hakeem Zayed Bey, and another supporter, Tylon Washington, who consistently gives suggestions and continues community works all over his neck of the woods. To my social media group, On the Edge Listeners Lounge, your awesome group, to Darlene and Cox, and to Arlene Cox McGriff, you two are also my wonderful, most special supporters as well. To the Real World Black News and Discussions group, who is moderated by tonight's and all month sponsors, Mr. Mark Pittman. Those of you who are affiliated with him on the groups know him as Marky Mark in the house. Thank you, Mark, for your awesome show of support and continuous support on and off the air. To the What About Us group, with our wonderful Professor Carl Tone Jones. To the Black History Suppress group, another one of Mark's moderated groups, to the Black Mamba group, the Black Love and Conversations group with Austin Linda Miller, to the Capitalist End group with Marvin Young. Thank you guys for all that you have done since the show's inception and since your inception. I appreciate everything and all things that you do. I want to say thank you to a very special worker in a local Pathmark in my neighborhood. Her name is Dakota. This woman is one of the very few people who defy the same old when it comes down to dealing with nasty customers or just being not liking her job or anything like that. She defies all of that we expect of the youth nowadays. She's constantly smiling. She's forever indulging. She completely is helpful, and she's willing to help you get the best of your shopping experience, even helpful with your children, and she does it with a smile no matter how long she's been on her feet. So thank you, Dakota. Continue to do what you do and be a community activist. Okay. Tonight, everybody, we're going to be speaking on the first of a week-long series. This entire week of broadcast will be dedicated to the issues of our community that affect us as adults. How exactly are they affecting our children? The way that they think, the way that they believe, the way that they are acting in their normal daily activities. These are the things that we're going to be touching on. So tonight, our first issue to address with regards to our youth is racism, the biggest, most common and dominant and predominant concern that we've had. Everything in the media lately has been racist driven. Everything in the media has been racism saturated. So today we're going to be speaking about how exactly it is that our children are viewing this. How do they feel about themselves, about the community, about what hopes they have out there. So, State of the Black Youth, Day 1, how does racism affect them? So you guys all know how this goes. I will be going out with our pre-discussion song and a word from our sponsors. We will be back right after a word from all of them. Just hang out with me and be back in just a sec. Here is Lil Trax and Beyonce with the Footwork and Love on Top remix. After them, a word from our sponsors. Be back in just a few. Thank you. Keep it locked right here.
I need everybody to the dance floor on this one, right now.
What?
Where's the Bronx? Where's Harlem? It's Will Trax, I don't want no problem.
Wow.
Where's Queens? Where's Brooklyn? Ladies scream if you feel you're good looking.
Wow.
Put your drinks up, take your shoes off. Super Trax,
yeah.
This is what we do, y'all.
Right.
Who you know make the club rock?
Will Trax,
I'ma ride you out to the beat.
Right.
Who put the party in the frenzy?
Oh, yeah.
So meet me on the floor where the ladies be. Long as the beat keep going, the track keep flowing, the drink keep flowing. Let me see some footwork. Super rocking all night till your feet hurt. I be the life for the party, from the club to the hotel lobby. Let's work. Let's work. Let's work. Let's work. I break a heel, break a heel, sweat it, sweat it. I break a heel, break a heel, sweat it, sweat it. I break a heel. Stay fresh like Dougie. East Coast, West Coast, worldwide. It's even footwork up in the UK. Break a heel, sweat it out, that's my new way. And this one is for the dancers. Who's the best host out? I need dance. Break a heel, sweat it out, sweat it. I break a heel, sweat it out, sweat it. I break a heel, sweat it out, sweat it. I break a heel, sweat it out, sweat it. Oh, let me see some footwork.
Oh,
New York, New York. There's no place like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything's straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote, attorneys at law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
The On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. Katie and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com on the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett, and it is discussion time, everyone. We have been speaking on many things with regards to the state of the African-American community. It's no secret from history right up to the present time that blacks have been completely ostracized, degraded, broken down, broken apart, killed off, used, everything that is the equivalent of what you would do to a rabid animal, to something that you considered repulsive, to something that you consider beneath you. As much as many of us have tried to put our head in the sand about it or don't want to accept the ugliness of it, even myself to a point where I believed that everything wasn't about a race conspiracy. It's not about that so much as racism is alive and well, and there's absolutely nothing that anyone could do about it except try to make a change. Well, with all that being said, we've spoken about it. I think one of the biggest things that went on and on and on was the Zimmerman trial with Trayvon Martin and the atrocity of a result of that. That then, right after that, we had to take a look at Jordan Davis, lost his life to yet another person who couldn't handle his hatred for the black race. Beyond that, we had to watch videos of a young 8-year-old boy coming out of a daycare center where he and his aunt that picked him up pretty much had about a 2-minute split between them, and in that short time, here comes a white offender to punch this boy in the face to steal his iPad, only to be further insulted by finding out that this offender has not only been an offender where he's been in jail, but he's been in jail not once, not twice, not even a dozen times, but 60 times for violent assaults. We've watched as a mother, while she made a dumb choice, put her children in the car for about 45 minutes, left them alone, in the attempt of trying to land a job interview. And what took place was she gets to go to jail and lose custody of her children, while her white counterpart, much younger, deliberate choice person who decided that drugs and arguing with her deadbeat boyfriend was more important than the safety of her infant son, who she placed on top of a car in a car seat while getting high with the keys, and wind up having her child be dropped into the middle of highway traffic. Highway traffic, where, by the grace of God, the little boy was unharmed. And then there's yet another one. A young mother involved with whatever type of domestic violence situation she's in. And she's under the Stand Your Ground law with the state's own court supported document of order protection. Regardless of what we believe she should have done or not left or whatever the case is, the fact remains this. Stand Your Ground law protects all who feel that they are in reasonable fear of their life. She had all the papers proving that she had reported such belief to the court of law. She fired a warning shot in the air, away from everyone. No damage was caused, just to scare off her attacker. And she not only got put in jail, but was sentenced to 25 years. And now, after the Zimmerman trial brought up and pointed out too much racism was involved, and they didn't want that to show, what they did was release her with contemplation of how to retry her. And that was their belief of carrying justice out. Only to come back and try to now send her to jail for 60 years. So I mentioned all of that, ladies and gentlemen, because I want you to reflect on what you were feeling at the time that you read this. How do you feel every time that you read it again, or someone brings it up or refers back to it? And we are adults who have the comprehension in our heads to understand how to assess the situation, how to be able to understand that we are outraged and why we're outraged. We have already done our time with regards to growing up, and we are now that next gen, that first generation to the next generation. And if we don't understand it, and if we are frustrated, and if we are angry, and we are outraged, and we want to make a difference, and we are tired, and we don't know what to do about it, and we're feeling helpless and hopeless and angry and all that other stuff, what do you think that each of these individual issues that we touch on weekly here, daily here, on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, on all social media, among each other during the games, among each other during the bar, if we are angry, what do you think that this is doing to a bunch of people that have no clue in their teen years how to even come to grips with who they are? So imagine trying to deal with adults that's supposed to be showing them the way, that's doing things just as horribly, as misconstrued, misguided, and discombobulated as their own little identity crisis search is. And let's go back even further. What do you think is doing for preschoolers and kindergartners? And what about that little boy that got punched in the face by a total stranger for no damn reason? So how do you think that racism is affecting them if it's affecting us so horribly? Tonight, we are going to have someone you've heard on this show often. Those of you involved with my social media groups know this man very well. Why? Because this man goes out there. First, he owns his own company with motives and the guise of operation to give back to the community, his black community, to try to re-empower us, rejuvenate our thoughts, restore us back to what we once were with finances, with financial counseling, with relationship suggestions, all of these things, and this man does it, and he bears all with his own frustrations. He's a father. He's a husband. He has baby mama drama. He has all of these things that we all speak about, and he also studies back to why it is that we're there. So with that being said, tonight, we are honoring none other than Mr. Patrick Irvine, who deserves it far beyond anything, because he's actually trying to do something. So with that being said, let's speak on a few things, and hopefully he'll call in and he'll be able to know that he'll press one and I'll know he's in and we'll get him started. Some of the things that I believe we can constitute as being direct or conscious effects to our youth is this. Racism put out a blatant attack on our people as a whole, but lately, our children have been the target. Our children have been the target. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry, there's a little bit of a crackling on my end. Just give me about 5 minutes while I am getting this together, okay? And I will be right with you. Hang on. Okay, bear with me. We have a little bit of freezing stuff going on. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for bearing with me. All of our wires are in place, so hopefully we won't be going through this. So, as I was discussing, racism and direct and conscious effects on our children. They're watching as they are being assaulted. They're not able, as their white counterparts are, to be able to convene in a group of more than two in front of a store or a park without some cop rolling by and automatically deeming that that's a suspicious group or a gang. So they have to watch their backs because nowadays all they know cops to be is no longer the law enforcement of safety, but the hunters of their kind. So we have to deal with, they have to deal with that. They don't have parents anymore that they can see, that they, you know, when you're young and you look up at your father or your mom and we have this perception that our parents can do anything. They're superheroes. Well, what do you think racism is doing to that perception, to the child, breaking the innocence, when they're looking at their fathers being gunned down, being handcuffed, being wrongfully convicted, being harshly punished for nonviolent crimes, being eviscerated and having their parts taken and harvested somewhere? When they got to fear that their mothers are going to be put in jail for the crime of leaving them alone for a better life, understandably, everybody, nobody should think to leave their children alone under any circumstances. I understand that. But sometimes there are situations where there's nothing you seem to be able to do about it in the process. Unlike a mother that knows she shouldn't be smoking any type of drugs that mess up the way you think, that interferes with sound mind, that interferes with you being able to be 125% plus capable at all times for the best well caretaker of your child or any child in your care, that would pick up willfully of a joint or whatever it is that you kids are calling it these days, smoke yourself into oblivion, still grab the keys and your infant baby, get into a car, forget that you have to drive 12 miles down the road, your baby drops into the middle of highway traffic, and the only thing saving that child from being ripped to shreds or brain dead is the fact that God chose his favor over that child and kept him safe in the middle of highway traffic. Highway traffic, ladies and gentlemen. And she gets probation. How do you think that racism is affecting the way our kids think when they're looking at the verdict for a man who willfully and consciously raped his 3-year-old daughter and his 15-month-old son, his own children? And a judge says, you can bypass jail because you won't be able to handle it. When all we've ever been teaching our children is that they want to avoid jail at all costs by doing the right thing, because jail is not for human people. It's not for civilized people. Jail is the big ultimate boo-boo that you go to when you do something big and bad that you shouldn't be doing. How the hell are we teaching them that, or can we teach them that and actually convince them of that? When the very people that we're telling them is going to tell you that that's wrong or judge you for your rewards or your consequences, it's telling them that mom and dad's teachings are a joke, that if I'm going to walk around and do the right thing and go to jail and get killed and shot down and brutalized anyway, I might as well go out with some fun. How do you think that it's feeling if we're upset with the fact that we can't walk around like grown people because of the color of our skin and get justice or get an opportunity? How are we going to be able to teach them not to feel that life has failed them, that the color of their skin was a curse from God? That is where we're at this evening. How do we do that? So whatever it is you're affected by and your children are witnessing or experiencing or the victim of, how on earth do you think that they're not feeling it twice as hard? Their sense of protection, as I said earlier, and their perception of protection from their parents or the police is shattered, and hence goes their innocence, as if everything else in this modern-day society isn't already chipping away at the protection of a child's innocence, where Santa Claus could now be a porn star. Tooth Fairy is probably somebody that's standing next to Miley Cyrus, helping her sexual act be more raunchy. Now we have the cops that's right up there in the boogeyman land. Now we have to teach our children past the ABCs and 1, 2, 3, as you all have heard me say this before. If you're black and you're too tall and you got your pants sagging or you're wearing a hoodie, be sure that if you are in trouble and you need a policeman's help, that you got your hands out and your arms banded and you make sure that your pockets are turned inside out so they don't see anything. Don't buy an Arizona juice. Don't buy Skittles. Because now every child in the world that's a black American is out there thinking that Skittles and Taboo is murder food. Does racism affect our children? How do you think that that works out? How did that work out? Racism criminalizes the normal activities of teenagers if they're black Americans. Like I've mentioned earlier, they can't stand together in a group of more than two people without society or the people who are supposed to protect them automatically assuming or getting up in arms or getting paranoid that it's a gang forming. Meanwhile, their white counterparts could be loud, chucking beer cans, you know, getting loud punk rock devil worship from you, and roam the streets being loud and raunchy. And the only thing that will be told to them is keep it down and keep it moving. Don't make me come back here. Meanwhile, if that had been the attitude and the behavior of a group of African-American children, there would have been billy clubs. There would have been illegal search and seizures. There would have been 1,000,006 instance interrogation questions. There would have been arrests that had to happen regardless if there was a crime committed or not. How many more of these hip world news hip-hop videos or all these expose videos do we need to see showing people pleading for their life because they don't understand why they're being arrested? And all they have to answer for it is that they're black and that somehow, some way, being that is a guilty crime. The most horrendous, by the way, actions come at them. That they can't buy Skittles without being penalized, either with their life or with some harsh sentence. That we have to wind up watching our president finally get a clemency plan in place, and we still don't have a fair shot at the apple, although we should be the first eligible to get out. Which leads us now to self-inflict problems by putting out a misconceived perception of what success, quote unquote, actually is. The fact that we as African Americans are a resourceful people, are able people, are a people that can take rocks, as I said before, stone, a pot of water, and some flame, put a little spices in there, and we've just made a gourmet rock soup meal. And none would be the wiser. But instead now we've been reduced to believing that the only way we could be successful is to mingle with our white counterparts who are stealing everything that we have to make it their own. That we have to act like fools, thugs, or loud, raunchy people. That our teens have to believe that the only way that we will get a shot out there in the big old shining star and Hollywood world is if we allow our teens to go out there and become part of the bad girls. If we let our daughters walk around believing they have to expose all their parts. Jesus, that sounds a little bit like all the slave movies we've seen. It's the only media that they see out there that they were allowed to have. It seems walking around talking about they're going to hit everything that moves and leave their baby stranded. That's where we are at this moment. So the question tonight is, how does racism affect our children if it's affecting us a certain way? We actually have a panelist there. Let me call them in and get their opinion for tonight. Welcome to the show, Paul. You're on the air.
Yeah, this is Carlos Elby Jones with Thalo Jenkins calling in from D.C.
Good evening, Sam.
Hey.
How are you?
Good evening. How are you doing, Katie?
I'm
awesome,
good.
Awesome topic.
Thank you very much. Tell me your answer to what you feel it is. How do you think, well, first of all, do you think racism has a different effect on our kids? Or are they following us?
I almost want to sit back and listen to how you you're able to capture. And for people that, you know, a lot of people are like, it's so easy to act like they're blind because whatever circumstances or situation, environment they brought up in or whatever. It's okay for them to act like they don't see the urgency or how important, you know, all of this really is to our day-to-day living, our everyday life. You know, people that choose to ignore, you know, it's really like we really never taught our children. Okay, since the information age hit, since television, since the telephone line, if you will, or whatever. We never really taught our children freedom, okay? Because of the circumstances at hand, we had to teach them fear and secrecy instead, you know. You know, all the while, this can't empower a nation. Now, racism is intended to operate on the child level anyway. So it affects our children more so than it affects us on every single level. You know, as soon as we start to break those natural, we start to become older, we start to break some of those chains. But the state as it is, you know, doesn't change for them, you know, until they reach a certain age anyway. And even that is just nothing but confusion, you know. It's been going on like, you know, I remember reading a book a long time ago.
Yeah. I completely agree. Did you have another panelist call in? Let me bring them in. Welcome to the show, Colby. On the air.
How you doing, Cody? This is Patrick.
Hey, Patrick. Welcome. Hey. This is our guest for the night, everyone. All right, Patrick, what is your spin on this? And, of course, you know, I'm honoring you this evening.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, first off. I forgot to press the one button, so I've been listening and I forgot you didn't know I was on the line because I didn't press the button. But I agree with Thalo. The racism affects children so much more deeply, I think, than it affects adults, and it affects them in a sinister way because it gets them to believe that. It's the normal state of affairs and that they just should accept it. And by the time you grow into being an adult, you know, like he said, you can begin to break some of those chains just by sheer force of will. But as a child, you see the world for what it is as you're learning about the world and learning, you know, what's going on and what it means to be you in the world, in the community, in the society that you live in, it's very easy for things to become normalized, and that's the problem we have all across the board, be it violence, be it lack of respect, be it any of the things you want to name, is that as young children, things become normalized. And so racism, because they're exposed to it at such an early age, we've all seen the report schoolers and the kindergartners and the first and second graders that are disciplined more harshly or disciplined more frequently and more harshly because they're black or brown children. We've seen these studies. You can only imagine what that begins to do to the self-esteem of a young child who is keeping notes of who's getting in trouble for what and how bad the punishment is. We can go into first, second grade classrooms like my son's, and he can tell me, you know, what he did to get in trouble. But then he can tell me, but Jason and Billy did the same thing three times, and they didn't get in trouble at all. You know, so what is that doing to their self-esteem? I think it's definitely damaging it. I think it's but at the same time, it's getting him to understand if there is no intervention on the parental level or on the community level, is beginning to teach him that he's going to have to bear an unfair burden in this society, and it begins to normalize that. And it begins to come to the point where he just, when he becomes an adult, he just accepts it. And he doesn't resist it. He doesn't fight it. It just, it is what it is, and he begins to do his best to ignore it at all costs. And that's, I think, what we're seeing in black society today, a bunch of adults who've grown from children who were taught that. They normalized it. Now they accept it, and they ignore it at all costs. And anybody that tries to point it out to them, they resist that because it goes against the fabric of who they've become.
Absolutely. Patrick, all the work that I have seen you do, you know, all the things that I have seen you do, and, you know, looking at your YouTube videos, Paula, I see you there. I'll bring you in a minute. All the work that I've seen you write, especially the one where you have the apology of a black man, which actually that I'm going to feature on tomorrow, so that I can, that we're going to be speaking on one of the next issues that we as adults deal with and how does it affect our youth. You have definitely touched on showing your passion for the black community being restored. You definitely have your own personal investments because you're a dad yourself. You've seen it, just like you just spoke of your child coming home and explaining why he got in trouble. There's so much other things. We speak often about how, and Professor Jones, when he comes on, he often, you know, explains how we become submissive to our thinking, to our oppressors, how I describe it almost like a form of Stockholm Syndrome, where we're in all this captivity, without the chains, without the whips, but we're in captivity. And then actually, in some cases, we do get the physical whips back through the police brutality. Jonathan Ferrell, who didn't even have the right to be investigated or interrogated as to why he was at some strange woman's house at 2 in the morning, stumbling and acting crazy, because they already presume that we're big and black, so we must be menacing, or we're going to be a threat, or something they can't subdue. But we're not entitled to have accidents that keep us blurry or give us head injuries that keep us disoriented. We're not entitled to be three people that are a group of blacks, be it girls or guys, and stand on the corner just to have fun without it being a gang intention or something that they have to watch to subdue or bring down.
You know,
we're not entitled to be leaders of our own household. That's like we all bring up the welfare system quite often. We, in order for us as a black single mother, get any type of assistance that's supposed to be fair and free, fair and available to all people, we have to say that we don't know where our baby's fathers are.
That's what I wanted to get at.
They're not allowed to be unemployed or need help with gainful employment. They're not allowed to go to school and get accolades. And they're not allowed to walk and buy Skittles in Arizona at the age of 16 if they're too tall and black. Why do our children have to watch what they wear? Why do our children, when they're in their teens, expressing themselves and come up with the craziest styles that should be driving their mothers and fathers crazy? What happens to put fear and another label to society? That is the problem that we have. So does racism affect them? That's the way.
Yes, most definitely. And if I can add, Katie.
Go ahead, sir. Go ahead, Caleb.
No, I'm sorry. I just wanted to add just really quick that, you know, and like we were saying, racism was always intended to affect our children. And you know, it's on an even deeper level. I remember reading in a book, like what was the name of it? Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl. You know, it gave an excellent depiction, right, of how we in the slave setting have to defend ourselves against the hatred against our children. In her autobiography, the woman who wrote it, I forgot her name right now, but she happened to live in a particular region in the South that passed slave law, okay? And that law made it so any woman, any black woman, any black queen who admitted who the father of her child was criminal. That was a crime. And the punishment for that crime was both parents would be flogged with 10 lashes or I think 10 to 20 lashes or something, and the child could be sold. That's the type of hatred they had towards our children. That children knows that's going on. You know, that's slave law. That was actually something that they had concocted in their society. It was working. You know what I mean? So our children, we have been under attack. We are under attack. Our children are more so under attack because, you know, they deal with this stuff every day. We, a lot of times when we get as adults, we then kind of seclude ourselves from the rest of society and start making our family and stuff. We kind of like try to isolate ourselves from it all while our children are like in the trenches of it every day, institutionalized in school, you know. And it was awful how, you know, a lot of people who were peers of mine, we grew up thinking that, you know, thinking that, you know, it was almost seemed hopeless the way that the media projected us. You know, it almost always seemed hopeless. Even I just remember feeling a sense of hopelessness, but also a sense of pride in my blackness, which was the only thing that always trumped that card. But I always felt when they would tell me that there were more black men in jail than in college, that always made me ashamed.
Absolutely.
It always made me ashamed. You know,
absolutely.
It always it wasn't even true.
You couldn't possibly not be affected by that if you are a human being, but especially as a person who's a part of that targeted race. I need to get back to Patrick in a minute, but there is a panelist waiting to come in. So just hang on 1 second, fellas. Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Good evening, Lady Barnett, and good evening to the rest of the panel. God bless you and your families.
God bless you too, Zeke, and welcome on to the panel. Okay, Patrick, I want to ask you a couple of your feedbacks to, I guess, what I mentioned earlier. One of the things that I believe racism definitely does do for our kids in particular is this. It definitely diminishes their every child's sense of protection, or you know how we put our parents up on this iconic pedestal, because when you're small and you're looking up at your father, he could be only 4'2", but when you're little, he looks like he's 10 feet tall. How do you think that it affects that innocent perception of my dad's a hero, my mom's a superhero, you know, this type of effect, when they're watching their father get shot down or dragged off in handcuffs or beaten down, when they're being told that they are animals that deserve to be sitting in the corner of the classroom on the floor to eat? Do you feel that it also contributes to them being forced to grow up in a way where they're not understanding it, which already is a problem just growing up as a teen? So do you feel that it adds to that, and is that another effect? Patrick, that was to you, hon.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, Patrick. Yeah, we're here.
I'm sorry. I definitely feel like it affects them. Especially as a young male, and even as a young female, not even especially, but anytime you see another authority supersede the authority of your parents, especially when it supersedes the authority of your father figure, who is supposed to be your protector, who is supposed to be your provider, who is supposed to be the umbrella that makes you feel safe. Anytime another entity comes in and shows more power than that entity, not only does it diminish the respect you might have for that entity, or being it your father or your mother, but it also diminishes how safe you feel about being in the world. It diminishes how much of an extrovert you might be in going after things. It diminishes the aggressiveness that you might need to have to go achieve certain things, to go and make certain things happen. It definitely has a major impact anytime a child sees, and not even just a black male or a child seeing their father being gunned down by the cops or beaten by the cops. Even if a child sees the cops getting behind his father and he watches his father's actions as he starts to clam up, I get a little nervous, or maybe he starts cursing or shaking his head, or the child can see and sense the fear or the anxiety or the nervousness.
Mm-hmm. And learns it.
And he does. He learns those things. And so anytime another authority figure comes in and not only challenges and supersedes, causes the parental figures to back down. Anytime a child sees those types of things, it has a dramatic impact on how the child views itself, how the child views its parents, and how the child views the authority figure that normally is coming in and superseding them. And in the case of the cops, now you have I can recall talking to a couple parents last week saying that their children, you know, didn't feel any type of qualms about calling the cops on them if they threatened to discipline the child or anything like that. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I never thought about doing that because I never saw the cops as superseding my mom's authority. Like, she would kill me for even suggesting that.
Absolutely.
They kill us.
My uncles and aunts and moms used to tell me, listen, you go ahead and I'll call the cops with you and give you the suitcase in the process. You know,
mm-hmm.
I want to think about another angle. What do you think we should do, or how do you think that it affects our kids when they're seeing actual children be such blatant victims of these atrocities? How do we explain the Trayvon Martin, a Jordan Davis, a Jonathan Ferrell? How do we explain the little boy that's coming out of his daycare center being punched in the face by his materialistic eyes? And the law not protecting them. How do we explain that?
They make it feel... Oh, my God.
Go ahead, Stella. Hello?
No,
yes,
I'm sorry.
Okay. I think every time a child sees a Trayvon Martin or Jordan Davis or the young man in Texas that got shot in the face or anything, any of those instances like that are happening, I think every time a black child sees those types of stories, it diminishes their belief. I think it diminishes parental credibility. And I think as parents, it becomes, especially if you haven't taught your children or at least made them aware of institutionalized racism, of the American society that they live in, when they see those things, if you haven't discussed those types of white supremacy and those types of things with them already, it kind of comes in as you don't have the credibility that you would have had. You think about all the things we tell our children, I'm telling you to do this for your own safety. I'm telling you to do this for your own safety. I'm telling you to do this for your own safety. And they're constantly saying, no matter what I do, I'm not safe. No matter what I do, I'm not safe. No matter what I'm doing, I'm not safe. And then that brings into mind the whole concept of YOLO. You only live once, so do as many stupid things as you can do because you're going to die anyway. You know, and I think all of those things tie in hand to hand with each other. But if you have a child that has been exposed to those types of situations or incidences, be it news, they're watching the news with your newspaper, however they come into contact with that information, even if it's you presenting it, I think it's necessary that parents take that point to have a serious discussion about what it means to be black in America, about institutionalized racism, about white supremacy, about the fact that, you know, yeah, the laws say something, but because you're black, they mean something else. You know, we have to have these talks with our children so that when they see these things, they're not destroyed by them in the way that they're being destroyed by them now. And our parental credibility and our communal credibility isn't destroyed in the process.
Absolutely, Patrick. And here's the other thing with what you said as well. We got to teach them all those things, and we can no longer put the sugarcoating Barney and Friends type of overhaul to it anymore. We've got to teach these 5-year-olds as if they're 18-year-olds. And it's a sad thing. Mm-hmm. We can no longer teach them that if you're lost, you go to a cop because the cop will be safe. We can't do that because the cops are the culprits nowadays. We can't teach them anymore just to do their ABCs or to come up there. Listen, in the case of Lavinia Johnson, okay, Lavinia mm-hmm. Johnson, we all know about that tragic story. Where mm-hmm. her father on the follow-up show spoke on how he no longer can tell his kids that the pride he once shared, having served for the force, is worth it. Because now when he sends his kids off, he's almost 110% sure they're not going to return. How do we teach our girls how to be innocent or you know, to wait till that special day when society says everybody we put in place to preserve that innocence is a problem? Now, I want to come back to you because I want to ask you for you to tell our listeners about what you do. But there's a panelist that's been waiting, Deacon, and I'd like for him to share in and weigh in on what he feels, and I'm going to get back to you. Deacon, what's your spin on tonight? How does racism affect our children?
Well, it affects them in all aspects of their life. But first of all, I'd like to say I agree with everything that everybody has been saying on the panel, and there have been some very powerful points. But my view on it is, when it comes to our children, we as the elder statesmen of today's society, we have to pour into our children to let them know, I always say, you have to keep it 100 with today's children. You can't sugarcoat anything with them. You have to let them know the things that are out there as far as when it comes to racism, to let you know that everybody of another race that smiles in your face do not have your best interests at heart. You have to be aware of that. So you can never go out here dealing in today's society with your guards down at any time. You know, it's not that you have to be leery all the time, because that wouldn't be good for them neither. But you have to also let them know that there's no people out there that are better than them, and they are not better than anybody else. First of all, you know, we are all supposed to be on a level playing field, but sometimes it's not going to be that way. You know, so we have to prepare them for these huge letdowns, because it's more, in my opinion, it's a lot more scarier now with the racism thing, because they try and cover it up so much, and that's what really makes it dangerous. You know, in past years, you know, racism was so much out there, it wasn't hidden, but now it's like so much of it is hidden. Look at what's happening in sports today, and not just in sports, in the entertainment world, and in just a regular everyday life on your job. You can see it. So it's up to us as a black people. We need to work on ourselves in order to deal with other races and other people. So we can't get all up in arms and getting ourselves all stressed out because one person wants to think ignorant. You can't feed ignorance with ignorance, because you're not going to get a positive out of that at any way. Okay. You know, so we all have to take a look at this thing, what we're dealing with, because you have some that, like they said, like a few of the panelists said, that they are accepting certain things. Like listen to the way the children think or say today. They say, well, it is what it is. And it's just like, well, okay, it don't make no sense making a fuss over this because it is what it is. No, it's not that way. It's not it is what it is. No, it is what it's not, because we have to change that. And we have to let them know that if we're all on a united front, we can make things change. We can't just sit back and accept it, because that's the wrong way to go.
To my panelists, be aware that the Troll Patrol is now has to be activated. Thank you very much. I just want to let you know, Patrick, I want you to, as much as you can, as in this most broadest summary as you can, explain what it is you do, what it is you offer, what it is that you are contributing, because you've got several facets to you. There's several things that you do all in one big bowl, you know, and I guess it's sort of like we've been trying with the show. So tell my listeners what it is you do, what's your company, where your writings are, all of these things.
Well, my hub is Think Free, Be Free, LLC, Incorporated. And basically what the primary focus of Think Free, Be Free is to help Black companies and Black non-for-profits get started, help them develop a strategic plan, a mission, a vision, and to help them really get going in the right direction. If you already are in business, we come in and we make sure that your business practices align with your business values and what you're trying to actually do. So it's purely strategic and helping people figure out the best plan for moving forward and then giving them all the assistance they need until they become self-sufficient. The goal is definitely not to string people along indefinitely. We want to get you up, get you going, get you moving as fast as we can. And you know, the goal is definitely to teach you and help you become self-sustaining in the process. I do a lot of writing on the Black community, a lot of writing on Black economics, a lot of which can be found at urbanintellectuals.com. I do a lot of blogging on positive thinking. That's all of that is at the Think Free, Be Free website. The videos that I do are the Minutes with Pat series that I'm doing now. That can be found at blacknesslives.com, along with my apology to Apology from a Black Man to Black Women. I write books, and those can be found at the Think Free, Be Free website. And basically, I just go around giving advice and giving my take on things. Most of the things I do for the benefit of my community, which means most of the time if I agree and I think that it's something that will benefit the community, I'll do it for you just because I believe the community needs it done. So that's pretty much a summary of what I do, who I am, where I am, and, you know, everything else. Again, all of that can be found at the hub, thinkfreebefree.com. That has links to everything else, with the exception of urbanintellectuals.com, but blacknesslives.com has a link to urbanintellectuals.com, so.
Absolutely wonderful. You're awesome.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Definitely have seen proof of it myself because you had me mesmerized a couple of times. I was like, did he just say that? When we spoke on the Donald Sterling situation, before I even clicked on to your YouTube video on the situation, I couldn't believe that when I actually listened, it was like you were sitting in my office at the time, writing and saying everything I was saying out loud. And then on the show, when we spoke about it, that was the reason why I pulled you in that night, because everything you said, I said out loud. You know, I've run into so many youth nowadays, and I guess being a mom of so many, it's really hard to overlook or let it go or think about, you know, it is what it is type situation, because my time is limited. And it's funny, but nowadays for our children, we have to say the same about them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sad situation. We do indeed have to give them that expect the worst, but reach for the best or hope for the best teaching. You know, long gone are the choices that we had or the benefits we had from having that village, from our ancestors, even up to, and when I say ancestors, that's where the kids look at me like I'm speaking about the textbook ancestors. I'm speaking as close as your grandfather. So it's a thing where nowadays we've got to teach our children, okay, when you go in with your first lunchbox and your first notebook and your box of crayons, listen, take the tape recorder just in case this person who looks like this says you look like this. I have to tell my son, watch the way you sag the pants. That's for me, mostly. But it also contributes to what they assess you to be. Uh-huh. And then he's tall. He's like 6'1 already. Okay, so it's like he's 6'1". He's got a deep voice. He looks pretty big. Can you imagine what the people on the outside are going to think when they see that? So I have to teach my son, you have to watch the way you walk. You have to watch the way you say things. If you should get lost, put your pockets out, put your hands out, spread your fingers, make sure everybody knows you come in peace. And then ask what you need. No longer can I tell my children, look for a police officer. And, you know, I'm going to say again, because I don't want to make this the big broad blanket to all police officers and law enforcement, because believe it or not, there's still some people out there who's in it for what it means. And I don't want to take away all the work that they have done and are continuing to do until they retire. I don't want to take away from them. I don't want to take away from those people that are out there really trying to make a difference and be human. Let me bring in our other panelists that's been waiting for a little bit. Patrick, hang on 1 second. Equipment failure. See how technology can work with you or against you. 1 second. Welcome to the show, Corley, on the air.
Good evening, Katie and panelists. This is Professor Carl Stone Jones.
Oh, he's here.
All right. Always somewhere in the background. Always somewhere in the background. How are you guys doing this evening?
Yes, how are you? All right. Well, Professor, you know we're definitely looking for your take on tonight's topic. How do you think racism affects our black youth today?
I think that our youth are actually the main targets of racism now. You know, the pendulum is switched. It used to be black men. Then it became, sisters were targets. Now I think the pendulum is switched to definitely target our children. And we see this with the negative images that are put out there. You look at the cases where, I mean, you just look like the last 2 years with Trayvon Martin, Jordan Davis, Darius Simmons. All these kids were killed by angry white men. And throughout the media, all you would hear is the stories about these children. You would hear the stories about their negative influences, their negative behaviors, and so forth. And they would be tried in the court of public opinion, and their characters would be assassinated. You look at even at DeSean Jackson, who is a young adult, but he still can be looked at as a child in my eyes, and you look at how the media tried to destroy him recently with, you know, gang-affiliated slurs and all this other type, all these things that were used to smear his reputation. And you look at all the images that are portrayed where our children are taught at an early age and shown that to be successful, they have to be extraordinary in the areas of athletics or some type of art, meaning music or entertainment, where they're not pushed to excel in the classroom. They're pushed out of schools and so forth. So the racism affects us, and it affects the children in such a negative and derogatory way that it seems to be intended on destroying the community at the roots, which are the children, which is ironic, considering where I was at on Saturday. Now, like I say, I spent a lot of time in Chester, Pennsylvania, and Chester is considered one of the most dangerous cities in the country. You know, for those of you who don't know the reputation of Chester, Pennsylvania, And to see the program that was put together by the Chester Youth Council on Saturday, it nearly brought tears to my eyes because I saw the youth, you know, dozens of teenagers and so forth who worked together throughout the year to put together a summit to bring classes and mentorship type programs into the city of Chester. And they put on this entire event from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., jam-packed, and had all types of events. He had classes being on responsibility and things of that nature. He had all these different things going on. And when you look at that, you say, you know, this is the message that needs to go out there. This is the message that needs to be broadcasted. This is why I actually recorded that event and put it on. I just finally loaded it to today, and if anybody gets a chance, I put it up on a lot of people's pages and so forth. It's the Twerk That Work video that I just put up, and I put the twerk in there because I'm trying to get this out to a specific crowd. But I think it's time that we start sharing those types of stories to combat what's happening in the media and concerns to in regards to how they portray our children. When they see the program that these children put together, then I think that we need to it'll shed a different light on what's going on in these communities that are seen as dead zones for our children. So I slid that in there to say that we need to start promoting messages like that to counteract the assault right. that racism is doing to our children.
You're absolutely right, Professor, on that one. You're absolutely right. There are things that we still keep forgetting that we have got to take the ball on, and we have to got to run with it. Because regardless, we are definitely battling twice the enemies. And now I'll say that. I mean, for lack of a better word, we have twice the enemies in the media. We have twice the enemies with peer pressure. Peer pressure nowadays with the interference of government into the households in all the wrong levels is another problem. Our children's advancing bodies because of whatever the agriculture companies are putting into our children's food for yielding better and more products. We have to deal with genetic cloning. We have to deal with all sorts of stuff that was never even a factor. We heard about this in sci-fi movies when we were growing up. Now they're actual reality. There is some bored old technician lab nerd that's out there trying to figure out how to alter and play God with humanity.
No,
we have so much to deal with. And then as African-American parents, as much as all of us hate to think that that's still going on, it is. Now what our children are hearing is, my mom or my dad is abusive, and they can come to the house anytime they want, and we can't defend ourselves, even though the law says we can't. Now we have to tell our children that pretty much it's almost like you can't drink from the white fountain. You can't go to Disneyland anymore, Disney World anymore, and expect that if Mickey Mouse happens to be somebody dressed up in a costume that's a pervert and pinch your butt if you sit there and want to make a complaint. It's depending on who's behind the costume where justice will come through. Now you have to say, if I got into a head-on collision with a tree, I better watch even my disorientation where I wind up looking for help.
You know, the interesting part, Katie, is that we have to come to grips with, and I think I heard Patrick say it earlier, we have to really take the offensive in this fight against white supremacy. We have to stop being passive when it comes to outlining it, identifying it, and speaking truth to power. I think one of the biggest injustices we do to our children is we try to pretend that this system does not affect them, that if you ignore it, it'll go away, and that all of the weight of the world is thrust upon their shoulders is not partially, in some part, due to the systematic racism that's taken an active role in destroying their forefathers and the communities that they live in and putting a stranglehold on their futures. And a lot of times we try to you know, I don't know, maybe it's foolish pride. We try to get around the whole topic of race because the white power structure in the media, in the dominant media, has always placed the onus on race onto us, never right. to the white community to address it, never to the white community to right its wrongs or whatever. It's always been placed in the behest of black people. You know, the question, what are you going to do about racism? Well, what can we do about racism? We can't stop people from feeling the way they feel, feeling privileged and feeling as though their privilege is justified. We can't stop that. We can only destroy white supremacy from within our community by addressing it, identifying it, and letting our children know that system will destroy us if we continue to work from within. We have to create our own systems of self-reliance and self-sustainability. And doing that, we have to start with our economic principles. We have to start with the academics. And we have to start educating our children on their glorious past. And also, we have to start to educate them on what we need to do in order to build a future that's going to be promising and one that we can survive in. Because as we look right now between white supremacy and the prison industrial complex and the distribution of the unfair distribution of drugs, street drugs and guns and firearms within our community, they are really wiping us out. And with these new laws that they're prepping to put on the book, they're trying to continue to find different ways to fill these prisons up with our children so that we have no one left to carry on what little legacy we have right now.
And you know what? The professor just hit on a very good point about being proactive. When we talk about, I just came back from Jacksonville, and we had a stat up there where a young boy, maybe 15, 16 years old, was maybe younger than that, was calling another young boy light-skinned. Now, the boy was highly yellow, and that wasn't a real big issue. They were all playing and joking. It should have been corrected, but the adults overlooked it until the young boy must have been 12 or 13 years old. He started screaming out, "You're a racist." That's racism. And all of the older kids, teenagers, whatever you want to call them, they were 16, 17 years old, they were all co-signing, "Yeah, that's racist. It's racist for you to call him light-skinned." Now I'm sitting back looking at this situation, thinking to myself, okay, has that word really been blown and misused so often that now a black child can't even make commentary on another black child without being called racist? You know, without them identifying that as racism? So, you know, that is, you know, with that, we had to have a discussion with them explaining what a racist is, what racism is, how a racist operates within the system of racism, and all of that. And it just got to be to where they were so indoctrinated into the dominant white society that they couldn't even comprehend what we were trying to say because we kept using the term racism. The moment we turned and used the term white supremacy, you know, it became that much easier to talk about the issues. Now, I still didn't have the breakthrough that I wanted to have, but it did clue me into something to say, maybe we need to restructure this thing because we hear racism so much and it's often used out of context and incorrectly. Maybe we just need to stop fighting racism and just go back to calling it what it is, white supremacy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have two panelists on the line. Troll Patrol, Sharpen. All right, 1 second. You start with, hello, welcome to the show. You're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, welcome to the show, caller. Who am I speaking with?
This is Tammy.
Hi, Tammy. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm fine. You will be first on the queue. Let me just bring in the other waiting panelists, okay? Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Hello, Kate. It's Pianchi. How you doing?
Hey, how are you, Sandra? All right, you'll be next up. Okay, Tammy. What's your feeling on tonight's topic? How do you think that racism affects our youth?
I just want to start off by thanking you, Katie, for recognizing my husband, and also like to recognize my husband for being involved in the black community and being instrumental in opening my eyes to the black community and coddling me as needed.
Oh, you're that Tammy. I'm sorry, honey. I haven't gotten your voice down back yet. Well, welcome to the show, Mrs. Irvine. How are you?
I'm good. But like I said, you know, he's helped me in the process as I've stumbled across shocking revelations. He's so hardworking and giving and willing to help out just about anybody that wants to help themselves in the community. And it's not like he's all talk either. He's out there teaching our sons, or he's here teaching our sons about their heritage and who they are, answering their questions about being black versus white, challenging the school who no longer teaches black history during Black History Month. And like one had a, you know, Black History Month, and a teacher sent home a report about Neil Armstrong, and my husband countered that by making our son do a report about Malcolm Little and sending that back. And in return, the teacher sent back a report about Jesse Owens. But saying all of that, that leads me to just saying, you know, in the black community, I feel like we have to do better about raising our children and educating them ourselves. I personally grew up in the white community. Color did not exist to me, really. I didn't know I was black until I moved up to D.C., which is also known as Chocolate City. And up there, you know, I bothered because I felt like, you know, black people up there, you know, I used to have the saying, they're too close to the White House, they feel entitled. But then when I moved down to North Carolina and experienced racism, like for the first, like really, you know, racism, it kind of made me go back. I called my dad and I was like, how come you didn't tell me this? How come you didn't prepare me for this? How come, you know, I didn't know about this? Like, you know, he's sitting there trying to coach me through it, and I'm just like, you know, I didn't know all of this existed, but it's blatant and it's plain as day. Like I said, when we moved to Greenville, you know, my kids came from a predominantly black school, and they went to an all-white school where they were kind of outed. And, you know, one of our sons was outside trying to get his life together because he didn't want to go back in. And so, you know, in that, when I talk about educating our kids, we just have to tell them who they are and where they come from in the process, you know, so that they, when they come against those things, that they're not stuck trying to figure out who am I, what am I, and where do I come from, because somebody like me, you know, I kind of got stuck in the middle. Here I am, you know, trying to figure out which side am I on. I was raised this way. I look this way. You know, I'm outed by my community at times, and then, you know, you walk into the white community in North Carolina, and they're like, you don't belong here either. So, you know, piggyback on what my husband said in regards to the children, you know, like our children spend a lot of times with their teachers. So we need to get more black educators involved. We need to have our kids see, you know, I was talking to a coworker who says she used to take her children to a black doctor where there was a male and a female doctor, because in reference to our children, one of our sons, he thinks his teacher is like God. Like when he comes home and he talks to us, my teacher said, and we're looking at him like, but we're your parents. We said, this is what you need to do. And the thing about that is, I'll tell you a small example. When we talk to our kids' teachers about their schoolwork, we have one black teacher and two white teachers. When the black teacher sits down with us, she talks to us, this is what your kid is doing, this is how it is, this is what he needs to improve on. When we talk to the white teachers, because our kids are well-mannered, they totally discredit what's going on with their schoolwork. Totally discredit it by saying, you know, one of our kids could be making a C or a D or, you know, and the thing about when I talk about the teacher having so much power, he doesn't feel like he needs help. I said, he brought us home a C. I said, you're getting these C's. You don't feel like you need help? Well, no, ma'am. I said, well, why not? Well, because I'm doing everything my teacher says to do. Okay, well, if you're doing everything your teacher says to do, but your grades are not lining up, what's going on with that? So then I get to the teacher, and I'm upset. I'm like, excuse me, you told me what's going on? And he's improving. Yeah, you know, but he works so hard, and he's such a good kid. I don't care about all of that. I need my son to make A's and B's. Like,
yes.
I don't care about him being, you know, it almost, and this is the response I get from both white teachers. So you got my son thinking he don't need no help because he's such a hard worker. Yeah, kudos, you're a hard worker. But it's not showing. So that's where we get into black education and, you know, having black mm-hmm. leaders in the school systems, because if he thinks it's okay to work hard, that's not what's going to get him. Hard work will get you to the top, but, you know, sometimes you have to be in that 90th or that 10th percentile to make it. But, you know, they brush that off completely. So, you know, that's just my whole spiel on that. As far as I've been picking up the little tidbits of everything, as far as the police, you know, I personally hate the police simply because a small incident as a child, you know, one of my loved male role models, they had like a domestic dispute. I remember it. You know, sometimes women, they call the police. But anyways, in the midst of that, 6 policemen showed up and surrounded, you know, my loved one. For what? 6 of them to 1 of him. What was, you know, that's scary.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
Scary. It's very unnecessary. You know, one black male, 6 white officers. And I'm sitting here like, you've got to be kidding me. Oh, sir, and he was just talking to him. Sir, just calm down. Just calm down. So, you know, even in that, you know, you have to, going back to your children, raise them up to realize that those things can happen. And as far as going back, like, to sum everything up with the black community, I just feel like we have to do better. I myself am coming into my blackness, and my husband's helping me with that, you know, but we have to do better as a community. Like my husband said, we just left Jacksonville. Like, and the streets there in the black community are depressing, not because of the people walking on them, but because of the filth that is on them. How do you not have more pride in your community to pick up the trash? Like, you can't even get out and go to Winn-Dixie without trash being all over the ground, muddled in the water. It's, like, disgusting.
Yeah.
And you expect somebody else to come out and clean up your streets when you don't clean up your own street? How do you do that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We just have to be waiting on people to take care of us and take care of our own communities and our own children.
Absolutely. And I understand fully what you mean with regards to your children giving their teachers the God complex over their parents. I'm going through that with my twin first graders right now. Now, I believe, Patrick, that you and I on Facebook, we spoke on the post that I put up as to what my children were actually bringing home as the homework that the parents see that we believe is what we need to help them with. Meanwhile, the school is grading them on a fifth to sixth grade reader, explaining that they are grading our children's progress by mandating that these kids meet up to a fifth to sixth grade reading level in first grade. They were grading my children on capitals and punctuations and things that affect. Now, do not get me wrong. Under no circumstances am I against a teacher recognizing that my child is a certain area and needs to be challenged. But don't you tell me that any first grader is supposed to know capitals like that. What I mean by that is kindergarten, when they first come in, that's when they first learn how to even write on paper. That's dependent, of course, on how far the parents were able to get them there. But the expectation in school of kindergarten, this is the very first grade that they are in to learn how to do things the real way. Okay? So usually they start with crayons. Then they start learning how to write the A's on the B's on the little dotted papers that they give you. By first grade, they are now able to advance on what they learned in kindergarten, but they're still not at the point of being held accountable. This is where now you are learning the serious stuff. but you're not really held accountable to it. By second grade, I fully expect you need to know the basics about proper English writing. But the things that they are sending home, making you feel as a parent that you are doing your part, that you are checking the proper homework. As I said before, I don't know if you remember, Patrick, I posted two pictures side by side. What I was receiving, believing that when the teacher said that they needed improvement, I was getting Jane goes to the store. Peter plays with his dog. Jane and Peter play with the dog while they ride the bike. But what they were getting in school and being told that they were too stupid or whatever the case was, and I'm not speaking on my kids per se, more like his whole entire class and grade. It was my rows of files and coins by, E.B. White, I think it is?
I saw that.
They're learning about governmental accountability. That's the word that was being used in this. What first grader knows what the hell that means? Barring some extra challenging work from home, that is. So this is where our children are being held accountable to. This is what they're putting off on our kids. They had a study out by the American Psychological Association who said that white people do not view children to be as young as they truly are. They automatically assume that our children at 5 and 6 are really 8 and 9.
Right, but
that's how they view them. Go ahead, Tammy.
But my husband, he brought up to us, too, that what happens with our children, what he brought up to me, what happens with our children is the white children and the black children start off at the same. Like if your black child starts off with a white child in the first grade, they're typically on the same level. But what happens is in those off periods and on the off, you know, the off season, summer, spring break, winter, these white children are being placed in these academic programs to where they are superseding the black children.
And absolutely.
If the black is not keeping up, then your child is made to look stupid. You know.
Tammy, there's a program in my children's school right now, okay? It's called ACES. I don't actually know what the acronym stands for off the top of my head. But it's designed for not just after school, but in school. This is a program where they have extra tutors that are there to challenge the homework that was already given, plus help any struggles along with the curriculum in place. Now, for 3 years, there's been a waiting list for the African-American children, but yet the few spotted white people that are in that school have been on that list, automatically re-enrolled every year. I agree 100%, and I see it there for myself. Another example, as you talked about your son getting C's, but his teacher said he works hard and he tries and he's a good, well-mannered kid. Okay, well, my daughter, who's 18 now, was in the fourth grade. Now, I'm a writer. Okay, I excel in English. So I go, and I'm all proud, and she was proud, and she's running home because her teacher on this particular essay assignment gave her a 4. Now, it used to be A, B, C, D, or 100, or 90, whatever. Now it's 1, 2, 3, and 4, which equates to, you know, what means they're struggling, and it's from 65 to whatever, and then 75 to whatever for 2, and blah, blah, blah. So she has a 4, which is the top grade you can get. So I'm just dying to see what my child wrote about. She's in the fourth grade, okay? Now, I read this essay, and before I even really got into it, first of all, I got frustrated. There were no commas in place properly. There were no paragraph formations. There were no punctuations in place. The content in the story really was kind of redundant, which my daughter tends to do whenever she knew she was supposed to do a report by a certain time and she tried to throw things together. So I sat this teacher down, young Caucasian, just out of her, you know, just got her teacher certificate and she's happy-go-lucky. And I said to her, could you please explain to me how you could possibly have given my daughter a 4 when I'm her mother and I wouldn't barely give her a 1?
Okay.
And she was like, well, I thought it was, you know, she expressed her thoughts pretty well. I said, how?
Right.
I write books, and I could tell you right now that I can't understand what the hell she wrote. So how did you give her four?
Right.
You're not going to promote my child if she doesn't warrant it or merit
right.
it. You
right.
need to promote our children based on what they've achieved. Now, if you really want to show me that you're on top of these children's progress, take away that damn annual state test that you solely promote these children on in New York City.
Right.
And
right.
just
that's
by what they've done all year.
You talk about being active in the community, and, you know, there's the thought of creating our own schools in that sense because our children need to be catered to in a certain way and stop being pushed along. Our children need to get the best of their education. I'm sitting here talking to my youngest kid's teacher, and she's like, well, he's brilliant. But I said, so do you believe in the school? She said, I believe in the school, but I wouldn't push him because of the children. And I said, well, what children? Because they're predominantly Hispanic school. She said, it's not them. It's us. So we have to do our due diligence into not only educating our children, but teaching them good behavior skills. You don't get – my kid comes home with a merit for hard work, clap, clap, but you don't get a merit for hard work in our house because that's what you're supposed to do.
Absolutely.
You don't get a merit for that. You're supposed to do that. Everybody's in an uproar about these kids getting into Yale and Princeton or whatever the case might be, these Ivy League schools. The question is, so if they go to does the black community have a school that's up to par as far as, you know, Yale or Princeton? No, so shut up.
You know something, Tammy, is another situation.
Together, get your community
okay.
together and do something.
I believe this. I believe this. If you have a subject that no matter how hard you try, and you're putting your best foot forward all the time, and you're coming up with a hard C, okay, first I want to figure out what exactly is it that you are struggling with. But if a hard C is your best foot forward, that no matter what you're doing, this is what you come up with, I would rather you get that hard C than a false A, okay? The other thing is, though, figure out what it is. Let's figure it out together. What is it exactly you need help with that at least you can get to the C+ and then to the B- or whatever it is? But some people are just really good in math and horrible in English. Some people are really, really good in English and horrible in math. Some people have a way where they need to learn a different way. Okay? My thing is, as you just said, Ivy League schools, right? How many people have gone to Yale or Harvard on whatever criteria was put out there? They were pushed up in the wrong way, but nobody really paid attention to their work. So they happen to make it into the Ivy League schools and then don't survive it. Because Ivy League schools demand that you are on a 90 average every semester at least.
That's a good
now,
point.
Right. A 90 average. That's hard for even the smartest of people. That really is. Because then you put this expectation on the kid that it has to be 100% perfection. Nobody is 100% perfection. But hard worker doesn't mean just going in and just doing your homework and, you know, complying with the rules. Hard worker means that you are going to sacrifice all that's unnecessary to make sure that your main stuff is in place. Your education comes first. Respecting your family comes first. Valuing your family and making sure that you're a good person in the community comes first. Before you're partying, before you can hit the mall, before you can go hang out and play PS4 or Xbox or any of those things. How many people have gone in there with what the perception of Ivy League means? Now, if you can make it and that's your goal and you've done it, great. But what is it that you have learned? Can you tell me what you've learned? Do you understand what that test you're about to get was for? You said something that I say all the time, that Patrick's work says all the time, that professor says, that deacon says, that sailor does on a daily basis. We have to pick up the ball and keep it moving. We do. We have to sit there and not sit back and take it. We have to say, no, that's not a four, that's a one. And when, I got told by one of the children's schools that I always try to serve on the PTA, and I did for the 4 years of my children's first school, that they know that my child was 100% advanced, but they weren't allowed to give them the top grade. So when I got into questioning that at the school leadership team meeting, I heard such roundabout garbage where nobody could explain to me what it was. What I got was, well, if we give the kid a 4, then that's really not being fair to them because, you know, then it makes them have an expectation that they must remain a 4 and they can't fail. I said, no, what you're telling them is that they did achieve the 4, they are at a 4 level, but you need them to stay at a 3 because the outside funding won't come. Because you tell me if you were in a white private school and somebody was performing at an A+, they're going to say, no, we're going to give you an A-, without some parent coming down with their attorney. Bianchi, thank you for being patient. What is it you have to say on tonight's subject?
Well, I've been listening about this thing about racism, which is superficial in many ways. I agree with the gentleman that came on before this lady. He's done a very eloquent job in it, describing, you know, many of the things that we call racism are not racism. People got a right not to like you. And trying to change people's mind to like you in a superficial way is really a waste of time to me, seeming to me. And like this thing with Mr. Sterling, I have yet to hear what Sterling said that was actually racist. What he said was a lot of truth to it. But one thing that this young lady said, and Katie, I don't understand why come, you know, other ethnic groups are not going to educate your children, give them the skills where they can compete against their own. I mean, let's just face that. Why is it so hard to understand that? I hear you saying that one teacher, if your child is doing a C, that's great expectations from their teacher. Then the other lady said that the white students are given additional work which would advance them academically beyond the black children. Well, what do you expect them to do? I wouldn't expect them to do any less. That's black folks' problem. And believe it or not, black folks act out in a racist way toward other black people. Because you're putting your children in an environment where they are not going to excel to the greater extent of their possibilities. White folks don't have nothing to do with that.
And your reply to tonight's question as to how racism affects youth is?
Oh, yes, I just got through talking about it. You know, when you have organizations, black organizations, that go against black will when it comes down to total school choice and full vouchers, it's black folks that come out and say, oh, no, they don't want that. First, your vanguard organizations, then your other spokespersons, especially those who follow a certain party that uses a donkey as their mascot. So what can one say? That's racism towards your own children for what it is, because you're preventing your children from attaining the greatest possibility that they can attain in order to acquire the skills whereas they can make a vast impact difference on their economic well-being in the United States. Immigrants come to the United States not because it's the home of the brave and the home of the free. They come here to extract wealth and dollars. And one would have to ask, how is it that black African immigrants do so well in the academic systems here in the United States?
Okay, you said you didn't hear anything in Donald Sterling's comments that were racist.
No.
So let me ask you a question. If you heard him say that blacks and Mexicans stink, and that's the reason why his property stinks, that there is stinky people, there wasn't anything racist in that in your mind?
You ever been to a housing project and went into stairways and elevators?
You didn't answer my question. You didn't answer
no,
my question.
I knew what he was talking about. In the context,
oh,
in the environment that he was talking about, yes, because I grew up around that type. And I don't know anything about Hispanics, but I never grew up around Hispanics. But I grew up around black folks. And we grew up around housing projects, including Pruitt-Igoe. Just go to YouTube and look it up. And I'm not saying, and wait a minute, let me put this like this. I'm not indicting the children. Well, children are going to do what children are going to do. But when you a landlord, and at that time in history, that's why they came along with Section 8, when you didn't have no way to get a tenant out of your property without it taking a year or more. You couldn't get your rent, and if they tore it up, well, it was just on you.
If your daughter was told that you're a black person that I'm dating and I'm a white person and I have absolutely no problem with you admiring Dr. Martin Luther King, but just don't bring black people and Dr. Martin Luther King to in public. Don't let anybody see that you are dealing with black people, because pretty much that's what he said straight out. So I'm going to ask you again.
Well,
you're nothing racist in that remark.
I don't, because he even mentioned that he loved everybody. He said he admired Magic Johnson.
Well, he was saying that they stink and don't bring them around. Bianchi.
You didn't say Magic Johnson stink.
No, he said don't bring black people in public. He said don't bring Magic Johnson to my game. He should be admired. He's my friend. But don't bring him around me in public. Don't bring him to
people,
my games. And by the way,
which people?
By the way, black people make up 90% of the very franchise he's banning Magic Johnson from. Magic Johnson being one of the biggest icons in basketball. So
and you know what else, Katie? You forget? You know what you forget? That he provides 2,000 to 3,000 tickets for black children and other minority children to come to the games.
And then take a full front page ad out to let everybody know that the racist was out there helping the very people he can't stand. So I wonder.
So now what are we going to do to him? You've suspended him for life from the club has suspended him from life. Well, let me ask you a question. For what he done was wrong, you think states have a right to bar felons from voting for life?
Well, let me see. If they're going to vote in a person that says it's okay to kill, if a pedophile is going to vote in a person who believes that you should rape children, to a point, yeah.
Well, I'm talking about a felon regaining
his
right to vote once he get out of jail. Some states say that you can't vote again.
I'm going to answer your question because everything that you said so far has gotten off of the question of the night. So I'm going to say this to you. If a person has fully redeemed themselves, and by the way, it's dependent on what that person got convicted for, because a lot of times it's been wrongful. So I'm going to ask you again. When a little kid at 5 years old is being told that you're a black animal that needs to sit on the floor and eat on the floor of the lunchroom and not along with other people who's considered not an animal, there's nothing racist in that.
Well, I don't know. Who said that?
I'm asking you an example, Bianchi. Answer that question.
You saying
or your daughter was sitting in the lunchroom and a white
in the public school.
In a public school.
All right.
If your daughter was in a public school, sitting at a lunchroom, or got on the white teacher's nerves for some reason, and this white teacher told this person, you know what, all you blacks are animals. You need to sit on the floor and eat your lunch.
You're absolutely right. The teacher should be reprimanded, just like we had a case here where a black teacher told a child who had a Muslim name, asked him, why come your parents didn't name you something that we could easily pronounce? So teachers in that case need to be gotten rid of.
My question to you is, you heard nothing racist in that statement?
Did I hear something racist in that statement?
Yeah,
well, I tell you what, it's on the verge of racism, yes. The children
it's
in the school.
It's on the verge of racism. Well, Bianchi, what exactly would somebody have to say to you as a black man that would be considered racism?
Well, when somebody came to me, if I went to get a job and a person would tell me, ask me, have I ever bumped my knee, have I ever bumped my elbow, and I said yes, and they would say, well, that would have left a calcium deposit in those areas which would disqualify you for this job. That's racist. which I did experience.
But calling you a black monkey and an animal because that's what your people are used to is not racism. What do you call
that's
that?
Not, no, that's just mean
spirit. Wow.
Spirit.
Wow. You know what? All the time that you've been on the head, I've been
Tracy,
trying to back
but,
in my
but
head.
Katie, is it against
I
the law?
I definitely understand it now.
Is it against
Everything
the law?
Everything you said tonight has been, I only was raised around black people. I've only was raised around that. I got it, Bianchi. Patrick, you're up again, sir. I need to hear from, well, tell me something, Patrick, because you have brought this up with regards to the Donald Sterling situation, okay? Here's a bunch of little kids. Love basketball, okay? You know how little children feel. Anybody involved with the person they admire is a big star to them, okay? Now, mm-hmm. they're seeing their favorite team turning their uniforms inside out, making a statement. They're hearing all these things now that, you know what, this is a 90% predominantly black league, and this man is saying things against blacks, and they're about 8 years old. How do you feel that we can explain that to them? And how do you feel that they were affected by it?
How do you explain basically the Clippers situation to a child whose favorite team was the Clippers?
Right. Let's say that. Let's use that. How would you explain that type of outright atrocity?
I think in that situation it becomes, well, we went back, we talk about understanding or being able to let them know the history, where they came from, what has happened, what has transpired in America. And then moving forward, we talk to them, in my opinion, about the culture of ownership that Donald Sterling was speaking to. You know, in my opinion, you play the tape for the child and you break down every single thing that he said and give the child historical context and real meaning for the things that he's saying. Now, how does it impact his favorite team? Or how does it impact him wanting to be a basketball player? Or how does it impact him moving forward? That's a difficult question. I do think it has an impact, most definitely. Most definitely.
I'd like to take a stab at it.
Oh, of course.
If I may.
Professor, you were next, Professor. So just let Patrick finish out his thought, and I'm going right to you.
Okay. It's a difficult question as to how the child responds to that sort of involvement. I do think that it makes the child maybe a little bit leery of getting involved in a situation where they have a white boss, or maybe they start to question some white authority figures that are in their lives. It might even push the child so far as to say they don't want to be a basketball player, but I do know, I'm not sure how the child would respond, and I don't want to, you know, I'm a psychology guy, but I'm not a child psychology guy, so I can't make any grand assumptions on that point, but I do know that when you play the tape for the child and the child goes over the point where he says black Jew life, white Jew life is 100 times more valuable than black Jew life, and he follows it up with, that's the culture, that's the way it is. Statements like that are definitely going to have an impact on how the child views themselves and values themselves as black children compared to their white counterparts.
Thank you. Okay, Professor, you got 9 minutes.
Yeah, I only need 9 minutes. You know, I would basically, this is the prototypical case that you can use in terms of discussing racism and white supremacy. Because when you take the statements that Donald Sterling was recorded saying and so forth, with him stating that very thing about, you know, white Jews being worth 100, then he went to 150 times worth the amount that black Jews are worth, and that blacks are always treated like dogs, and that's just how the culture is. basically, he is breaking down systematic white supremacy from an ideological standpoint. So when
right.
you see, when you're able to identify that, you can show these children that as long as you ascribe to work in a system where you have to answer to a person like Donald Sterling, you will never be equal. You will never earn equal status. You will never be seen outside of the color barrier and so forth. You will always be seen as black and always be seen as less than. And I used that this weekend as a soapbox to say, listen, it's time for us to start developing our own systems of sustainability, our own structures within our community to safeguard our children from having to go out and work for people like a Donald Sterling, because Donald Sterling doesn't represent a minority of thought out there. Donald Sterling represents a majority of thinkers when it comes to social engineers and social planners. And I do agree with Bianca on one point where we do need to take control of our situation. We've been pretty much put in a situation, not put in a situation, but we've been lulled to sleep into the whole, and I'm not trying to offend anybody by this, but we're waiting for Jesus. We're waiting for Superman. We're waiting for somebody to come, somebody from the dominant white society to rescue us. That's why I was real happy when Donald Sterling said what he said, because when people like me say things to the black community about systematic white supremacy, a lot of people in the black community look and say, come on, man, go ahead with that black stuff. But when you hear from a white man, often it rings bells in the black community. So now that a white man has come out and said in private, and elated these comments, then we know these conversations are taking place all over the world. Where
they
are. No black
He's
presence.
Absolutely right.
Okay.
Can I say one other thing, Katie, real quick, on following up on him?
Let the professor finish. Go ahead, professor.
Well, when we see these conversations taking place all over the world, and so now we have to start taking more initiative to be the kickstarters within our community. We had a program out there that's about to be shut down in Chester. I put the onus on the community. Y'all keep that program running. Y'all donate y'all money. Don't get turned up on Fridays. Let's make sure we take that turn-up money and build up the community by putting our money back in the community, by investing and bringing teachers to the community that look like you, that teach your history, that teach your children about the principles of group economics and things of that nature.
Let me ask the professor a question. Professor,
yes, sir.
Yeah,
given, real quick, Professor, this thing with Sterling, what should the attention be? Should it be to make him sell the team, whereas a black owner can own not only that team but more teams, and therefore be able to put more black people in the inner offices, in the marketing, in the sports medicine, in the trainers, where they are not presently today, in concessions? That's where I think that the attention should be drawn, rather than trying to get this old man to tell you that he love you. He don't love. Well, he say he love you, but who in the hell care if he love? I want his franchise. That's the way you defeat white supremacy. You got to compete against it. They ain't going to give you nothing. You got to take it. And why are we afraid to take it?
You know what? I got to continue this tomorrow because we are down to 3 minutes. But it sounds to me, Bianchi, like you contradict your own beliefs, like you believe two things at once, because that's what our whole goal is, exactly what you said. Selling the team, absolutely. He has no damn right. First of all, to be the owner of a team already, to me, incites racism, because we were owned by plantation masters. So this is exactly a modern-day version of that. So if the least that could have happened, and the first and foremost thing that should have happened, and frankly, my thing is, the primary focus of outrage for us should have been ourselves. for continuing to go and buy his junk and stand
there.
Well,
he ain't doing no more than Magic Johnson doing. Magic Johnson is in business with the Grunenheimics, and they go all the way back into the 1800s dealing with Loeb and Loeb, who sold slaves. I mean, insured slaves.
You know what? Like I said, I got 3 minutes, Bianchi, and I'm going to tell you one thing. Magic Johnson at least has proven that he's put stuff back into the black community, unlike Jordan, unlike Kobe. I can say that. Say whatever it is that you want to say about Magic Johnson doing whatever. Whatever game he's played it back to us. But no way in hell should a white man who can't stand the people that's making his business and that he owns, quote, unquote, should still be an owner, quote, unquote. So, yes, he should have the team sold. And since there are other coal black owners on there, it would be nice for them to have the next step, a shot at actually bringing it back into the fold. Anyway, I do want to thank you very much, Mr. and Mrs. Irvine, Professor Bianchi, Deacon, Stalo. Thank you all very much for joining me tonight. Thank you all that have been out there getting involved with this. What we as adults are upset with, and we are understanding.
No, it was just a brief, like, pause.
I guess she fell out.
Well, let's end the show by thanking Katie.
Say that again?
I said we were going to end the show for you by thanking you and tell everybody have a good night.
Yes, thank you. All of us need to just keep our head up and understand whatever it is we're outraged about with understanding. Our children are confused about and outraged. So we need to keep it up and step it up. And like all of us on this panel are aware of, we are not loved by the outside world. We have to love ourselves. And tomorrow, ironically, we're going to be speaking on how internal hatred amongst ourselves affects our children. Okay? So until tomorrow night, everybody, I'm going to go off and take a Pepto-Bismol and a headache medicine and everything else that entails this little topic tonight. And I will see you here tomorrow night at 10:30. So be blessed, be a blessing, and make a difference. Good night, all.
Good night.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.